Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, welcome, and thanks for joining us today. I'm on special assignment, but we pre-recorded two new interviews to bring you for our third Monday series, where we focus on business, careers, and ways to make money. And my first guest today is a marketing dynamo with proven strategies for creating quick cash. Here she is. All right, my guest has generated instant income for celebrity entrepreneurs like Chicken Soup for the Soul, Les Brown, and others. But today, Janet Schweitzer will talk to us about how you too can generate incredible amounts of cash in just hours, days, or weeks. She's the author of a new book called Instant Income: Strategies That Bring in the Cash. Whether you've got a small business, whether you're employed, or if you want to be an occasional entrepreneur making a few thousand dollars on the side several times a year, Janet Schweitzer has the formula for putting cash in your bank account. She's written a great new book. It's called Instant Income: Strategies That Bring in the Cash for Small Businesses, Innovative Employees, and Occasional Entrepreneurs. Janet Schweitzer, welcome to the show.
Hey, Vicki. It's a great day to make some instant income, isn't it?
There we go. And this really is a great book. You know about what you speak. You've been putting it in practice for many, many years. I want to just start off with a little bit of your background, Janet, so that our listeners know where you're coming from. You say in the book that you've been creating cash for businesses for almost as long as you can remember. Yet when you started out, you fully expected to be working for the Foreign Service, and you were fully expecting to get a call from NATO one day. What happened? How did you get into the business you're in now?
Well, I literally fell into it. I was a recent college graduate. I had a degree in international relations from UC Davis, and I did want to go into the Foreign Service. I actually worked for a member of Congress up until the time that I graduated. And while I was waiting around for the plum assignment from NATO to come in, I actually just went over to a local bank. They had about six or eight branches. I thought I would just get a part-time job there, and next thing I knew, I was in the president's office being hired as their marketing director. Now, I didn't know anything about marketing at all, but I had been a published journalist at age 19 up until then. All of the direct mail and other kinds of projects that I had worked on for my member of Congress, that was all marketing, and I really had the messaging down. I knew how to write the words that caused people to respond, but I didn't know that was marketing. So I thought, gosh, you know, if I can just apply what I know and learn a few things about, mailing a letter, printing postcards, running newspaper ads, if I can learn the mechanics of it, then I can be a success for the bank. And literally the first direct mail piece that I sent out for the bank garnered a 26% response, getting small businesses, local area small businesses, to come into the bank for loan applications. So it was very successful, and I was on my way, never looked back to going into the Foreign Service, and have been doing marketing for small businesses ever since.
Yeah, and you've got some very high-profile celebrity entrepreneur clients, Jack Canfield for one, Mark Victor Hansen, Jay Abraham. How did you get into marketing for people like that?
Well, I literally was recommended for a job working for Jay Abraham, and for the first 3 years that I worked with him, I ended up building his publishing division. When I started with him, he had just a few newsletters and some other products. And over a period of 3 years, we developed hundreds of products, a 28-page catalog, national telemarketing effort, outside fulfillment, all of those things. And in the fourth year, I ended up running that whole publishing division for Jay. And then after that, I sort of moved on and wanted to do something different. And Jack Canfield was my very first, I guess you could call him a consulting client at the time. I'd been an employee my whole life, but I sort of became an accidental consultant, and Chicken Soup for the Soul was my very first client. 10 months later, it was, of course, a New York Times number one bestseller, so mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun to work on, doing the early marketing on Chicken Soup for the Soul. After that, I ended up getting, literally on referral from Jack and Mark and other clients, work, projects, strategy work, all kinds of things from some of the top name authors and celebrity entrepreneurs out there.
Now, I know you co-authored The Success Principles, which I call my Bible, with Jack Canfield. Mm-hmm. You've written this new book, Instant Income, and a long overdue book, I think. But let's talk about this, because there are a lot of books out on the shelves right now talking about money. What makes this one different, Janet?
Well, I think most personal finance books today really do focus on helping you cut back on your expenses or how to better invest the money that's already coming in. And in the same way, most books for small business focus on trends in the marketplace, everything but how to make money in a small business or how to boost your paycheck if you're employed. And I wanted to write a book whose sole purpose is to help you bring in the cash, which is what I do for my clients all day long. And the difference literally with the instant income system, what I wanted to write about, is that it does focus the entire business, from the owner to the staff to the outsource vendors, suppliers, everybody, on creating substantial new cash flow and profits for the business. It uses all of these proven income-producing strategies for generating greater sales from existing customers and for recruiting other people to help you bring in the cash and for turning your advertising into ads that actually make the phone ring. For strategies for selling more effectively, for utilizing the internet as a revenue stream, and for also utilizing overlooked assets in the business. As I like to say, there are millions of ways to make money in a small business, but then there are some select strategies that are just very quick to execute and that also bring in the cash very quickly too, and those are the strategies that make up the instant income system. And you don't have to have a traditional bricks and mortar business either. You can use these strategies with your home-based business if you're a solo entrepreneur, if you do money-making projects on the side, even if you or your spouse are employed and you want to get a big pay raise at work by using these strategies to make your employer more money and sharing in those profits. And there are strategies like little-known advertising techniques that are used by just a tiny fraction of business owners out there, strategies for getting your existing customers to spend more money with you if you have customers already, and if you don't, there are specific joint venture strategies that actually recruit other people to bring in the cash and the new customers for you. There are other strategies like those that we use for bringing on professional salespeople at no cost to you, strategies for making tens of thousands of dollars on your very first month on the internet. Hopefully we'll get to talk about that. And most small businesses, Vicki, as you know, they run on cash. If there's money left in the checking account, you know the business is still alive. And if you're about to close your business on Friday because there's no money in the checking account, these are methods that can put money there by Thursday night. And yet they're literally being used by just a tiny percentage of the businesses out there. And that's why I wrote the book, Instant Income, to really detail these little-known strategies for everyone.
There are a lot of books out there that promise the mountain and don't deliver. This book delivers. I mean, you really do know what you're talking about. And I can't stress that enough, because there are a lot of books out there that really, they make a lot of false promises. So let's look. You do talk about seven main areas where you can find additional income. I wonder if we could just kind of gloss over those at a high level. Take it from there. We'll look at some of the actual strategies. 35 strategies you've got in this book.
Right, and for those listening, there are literally seven chapters just at the beginning of the book that do talk about these seven major areas. Each of those chapters starts with a little tutorial, everything you need to know about that specific area, and then strategies that follow that you can execute right away, along with actual scripts, words to say over the telephone, sales letters and things that you can write. Interview questions for interviewing clients, for client testimonials, things like that. But the seven areas, just to give you the 50,000-foot view of them, the first area is actually your existing customers. For those of you listening who have customers already, there are specific strategies for getting more money out of those customers. Things like upselling them when they come into your retail store to buy one thing, you end up selling them a few other items to go along with that one thing. That's upselling. The second major area is actually joint ventures. This is people that you know that you could do business with, businesses that are similar to yours, even your competitors, anybody who can refer customers to you to help bring in the cash quickly. The third area is actually your advertising. For those companies who are doing advertising on a regular basis, they need to be looking at a specific style of advertising that causes the cash to come in very quickly. And the fourth area is prospecting, and that is basically the idea of filling the pipeline with potential new customers. That's an area that you need to be focusing on. The fifth area is actually your sales force. Even if you're a solo entrepreneur, there are things that you can do to increase sales using various sales scripts, voice broadcasting, other kinds of strategies. And, of course, we know sales are things like follow-up telemarketing, making specific product and service offers to make sure that your salespeople have specific offers and deadlines to sell into. The sixth area in a small business for making instant income, the Internet, actually. You'd be surprised how many small businesses only have what is called a brochure site, all kinds of information about the business, but they don't have a website that is set up to sell anything. So that chapter talks a lot about that. And then the last area is actually overlooked assets. These are things like inventory in the warehouse that needs to be liquidated or excess service capacity on weekday mornings or weekend evenings that perhaps your business could be generating income. Credit accounts is an area. Also, employee expertise. A lot of small businesses make a ton of money selling the expertise of their employees. So those are the seven areas where instant income can be made in small business.
I want to just talk a little bit about a couple of the strategies in joint venture relationships. I had an email from a listener, Andy P. in Portland, Oregon, and he's been trying to set up a series of teleseminars, but his partner thinks it's too much work with no guarantee on return. Teleseminars is one of your strategies in the book. I wonder if you'd address that a little.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a strategy that dates all the way back to the early 90s. It's a very well-proven strategy. Works very, very well. And I can tell you about the first teleseminar I actually conducted was for Jack Canfield. Every summer at that time was conducting a business building program for people who wanted to become self-esteem consultants or self-esteem workshop leaders, and he needed a strategy for filling that seminar. What we did is we invited people on his list to a large group teleconference call. That's really what a teleseminar is, with the main speaker, in this case it was Jack, speaking to about 130 people who were on the line. Now, the way the technology works is that everyone on the line can be muted out so that no one can hear each other. There's no static on the line. There's no noise. They're just all listening to the seminar leader or the speaker, in this case was Jack. And literally within 6 weeks, we had put about 130 people into his seminar, and he had $105,000 in cash in the bank. That's pretty quick to make over $100,000 6 weeks for a small business like his.
Assuming this was selling his products off the teleseminar?
Yeah, it was actually closing prospective consultants and workshop leaders into his big training program. Mm.
Let's talk a little bit about advertising. That was the main area, number three, that you just reviewed with us. A lot of people go wrong with their advertising. Where do you find that that happens, Janet?
Well, my main recommendation for small businesses is to use a method called direct response style advertising. Direct response style advertising is really just a method of advertising or marketing that provides all of the information a reader would need in order to make a buying decision, and then it populates those ads with some scientifically proven emotional trigger phrases and other economic benefits that cause the reader to respond quicker and readers to respond in much higher numbers. Now, direct response advertising is quite a bit different from what's called institutional advertising. Those are the big full-page ads that you see in main metropolitan newspapers and national newspapers where there's a big ad, a beautiful photo, a few lines of copy, and the company's logo. That ad doesn't sell anything. Direct response advertising, by contrast, causes an immediate reaction, immediate response on the part of the reader. The reason I recommend that direct response specifically for small businesses is because their ad budgets are very small, and those ads need to be generating many, many times their cost in business returned to the small business. So direct response advertising is really a method to check into, and I talk about it extensively in the book. In fact, I talk about the 16 components of a well-crafted sales letter or ad, direct response style, everything from the headline to the bullets, the testimonials, the close, the offer, the call to action, the postscript. These are all elements of a well-crafted direct response style ad, and I talk about those in the book. One thing, by the way, that small businesses can do very, very easily, two things actually that they can do that will literally improve their advertising overnight. The first thing is to literally make specific offers in your marketing materials, in your ads. Instead of saying, we have great prices, instead you could go out with a headline or some body copy that says, for example, if you're in the heating and air conditioning business, you can say, we'll sell you a top-of-the-line air conditioning unit for just $3,285, including a 5-year written warranty and free replacement filters for as long as you own your home. That's very, very specific, and it's quite a bit different from just saying we have great prices or we have excellent service. So make very, very specific offers. The other thing that you can do is interview your satisfied customers using a script that's in the book that literally extracts the ad copy that you're looking for. And if you ask the interview questions in the order that I provide in the book, that interview will generate a testimonial-style ad where your customer or client actually helps sell your product or service for you.
Yeah, you literally walk people right through that. I just finished reading that, yeah. I had an email from a listener while we're talking about advertising PR. She actually hired a PR firm, which can get very expensive to run a campaign to promote her business. It's it's a business coaching service and online workshops, and that's what she was trying to promote through a press release. She paid them a couple of $1,000s, which I think is probably too much, for press releases that ran in local publications as well as across the nation, and she had zero response. They told her it was because her name wasn't well enough known and she should pay them to run an ad campaign first. But she says, I think their approach is wrong. I've read that press releases need to be newsworthy to get attention. How can I make myself more newsworthy? What would you advise her to do with that?
That's a very good question. And I'm sorry that she had that experience, but there is a solution. Actually, it doesn't matter whether she's famous or not. There are methods you can use for press release distribution that literally force distribution, particularly out over the Internet. We use this all the time. A perfect example is a situation in my business. We ran just a couple of months ago a press release. We paid, it was $390 that we paid to have it distributed, and literally within the first 2 to 3 hours, we had 800 opt-ins at our website. People read the newspaper article and went to our website to opt in for a free report that we offered at the end of the press release. We were literally on 220 authoritative news sites, blogs, and other kinds of sites as permanent content with that article. And literally, the phone has been ringing off the hook with media ever since, media inquiries ever since. So that cost, as I said, $390. And the key is that when you pay to have your press release distributed over the Internet, it does force distribution. Those news outlets have to distribute your press release under the contract because you've paid for that. The key is to embed your press release with keywords that you know people, that your target market are searching for on the Internet. Because here's the thing that a lot of people don't know. These authoritative websites, the news sites, the news blogs, they have what's called spider software that is constantly looking for articles on specific topics, and it uses keywords to do those searches. If your press release has those keywords embedded, those news sites and blogs and authoritative websites will find your article, and automatically, with no human touch whatsoever, it will post your article to your website to their website. And if you've put an offer in there at the end for some free item at your website, it will drive tons of traffic right back to your website. And by the way, that complete write-up, along with the entire strategy that I used at my company, the press release that we used, how this all works, how to write a press release, there's even a worksheet included on how to write these kinds of press releases, that's available at my website, instantincome.com, along with a couple of other things, two special guides that I put together. All of this is free, by the way. The first guide is a planning tool that helps you immediately pursue new business development activities in your business. And if you opt in for that, you'll also receive automatically via email another guide, my Instant Income 10-Day Turnaround Program. This second guide, by the way, helps you identify how much emergency money you need to make, who can help you bring in that money, tells you what to do every single day for 10 days to bring in emergency cash. And after that follows the Internet Press Release Distribution Package. All of this is free at my website, instantincome.com.
Yeah, a lot of really good information up there. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Janet Schweitzer. She's the author of Instant Income, Strategies That Bring in the Cash for Small Businesses, Innovative Employees, and Occasional Entrepreneurs. Stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
Don't touch that dial. You might miss something life-changing. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Janet Schweitzer. She's the author of Instant Income, Strategies That Bring in the Cash for Small Businesses, Innovative Employees, and Occasional Entrepreneurs. And Janet, before the break, we were talking about press releases, and you go to great lengths. You outline this in your book. You've got tools on your website about this. How do we know if we're looking on the web, if a PR firm, we see many storefronts up there, we don't see a name behind it. How do we know if we're dealing with a legitimate PR company?
Well, that's a very good question. I would certainly ask for references, other clients that they've worked with who you can actually contact to find out if the work that they've done has been successful for that company. That would be my first question when hiring any sort of outside vendor to work on my small business, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Can I speak to other people who you've helped?
One thing you talk about in sales efforts is downsell positions. You say they're imperative to a sales situation and a great instant income strategy. In the book, you say that you've seen close rates jump to more than 90% by adding downselling to programs. Tell us a little bit about what you mean by that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, salespeople oftentimes are, if you are making specific offers in your advertising, they're getting inbound calls for these specific packages, specific price points, specific products or services that are being sold. But oftentimes, giving your salesperson some other less expensive item to sell will help them improve that close rate. The one thing that you don't want to do is have any caller that calls into the business get away without buying something. And so even though your salespeople might be wanting to sell the highest price package that you have, you always need to give them the opportunity to sell something less expensive or less elaborate in case that customer is about to get away. They can always go to what's called the downsell position and sell that customer at least something.
Yeah, we can always come down. We can't go up in price.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you've worked with all kinds of companies. Reading your book, you've even worked with moms who stay at home, the weekend jewelry designer, corporate managers, and even a sheep farmer who needed extra cash.
Right, and if a sheep farmer can do this, anyone can.
Well, let's say I'm an employee and I'm working for someone else and, you know, I'm on a fixed income and I see an opportunity where the company could save money or make money. How do I approach my boss and how do I get myself involved? How do I make sure I get paid for my brilliant idea?
Yeah, well, if you're employed, you can actually boost your paycheck by identifying the income opportunities in your employer's business and then go to your employer and negotiate a pay raise or a promotion or even a percentage of the revenue for helping to bring in that cash. And the Instant Income book not only tells you how to identify those income opportunities, it even gives you a sample script for talking to your employer and negotiating a deal. It's all in the book and also in the free 10-day turnaround workbook that's at the website instantincome.com, as I mentioned earlier. And this is something that I did when I was 29. I worked for a small consulting firm. As I mentioned earlier, this is Jay Abraham's company. I published special reports and training tools on the side. And in my fourth year there, as part of running the publishing division, Jay and his partner offered me the opportunity to really work exclusively on marketing all of those published materials that I'd helped develop over the previous 3 years. And they offered to pay me a percentage on every dollar in revenue that I brought in. And I ended up almost doubling my salary and even earning a nice $20,000 commission on one promotion that I did. And I used these instant income strategies to create that revenue for my employer. And this is something that any employee can do, whether you work in the warehouse, whether you're in the accounting department, if you're in the customer service department. I was talking to somebody the other day who was mentioning a customer service person at a major airline went to the CEO of the airline and said, hey, I have an idea for packaging flights for bridal parties, for brides and grooms that are getting married overseas. Let's package up a special product with special discounts just for those families and friends to fly over en masse for the wedding. And that was something, now that the CEO is working directly with that customer service worker on that specific program for the airline. So this is something that every business can do, every employee can do. You just identify something, say, hey, I think we can make some money around here. I think we can save some money around here. I need to get my ducks in a row, get my talking points together using the Instant Income book, and I'm going to sit down with my supervisor or my employer, the CEO or president, and make a deal on that.
One of the things you recommend highly in the book is doing an overnight audit, and that applies whether we are an occasional entrepreneur, whether we're a full-time entrepreneur, or as you call them, an intrapreneur, somebody who works for a company but sees an opportunity there. What are some of the things we need to look at in that overnight audit so that we can start making money as quickly as possible?
Well, the book Instant Income includes that Instant Income Overnight Audit, and it's really a unique tool, and we have it online at the website, by the way, that creates a custom printed plan for generating cash in your business using details of your specific circumstances. And it literally walks you through every single Instant Income strategy, asking you to jot down the exact products that you're going to upsell, which customers you'll convert into ongoing buyers, and so on. 35 audit questions, all tied to the 35 strategies in the book. And once you've input your information, the audit actually calculates the actual dollars that you could earn from executing each one of those individual strategies. And then it even ranks your final results from the most profitable strategies down to the ones that you could really leave until later. Finally, it produces a really nice, clean, easy-to-read report of all your plans and your anticipated financial outcomes. So, for example, if you discover by doing the audit that strategy A is going to earn you $63,000, but strategy B will only earn you $23,000, well, of course, you're going to do strategy A first, using, again, all of the data that you've input and all the plans that you've inputted.
So a little bit of work up front, but it's going to pay off in the long run because you're not wasting your time on things that aren't going to bring you much in. You're focusing on the areas where you're going to get the highest return.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's perfect for employees, by the way, because they can go through the audit and actually bring to the table, to that conversation with their employer, a complete printout of all of the areas of the business where they have found money just sitting waiting to be scooped up.
Let's talk about the internet, Janet. Let's say I have a storefront, as many people do, and I might be selling services or I might be selling retail. Are the strategies the same for selling a service as they are retail?
Yes, over the internet, absolutely. And the book details a three-page website formula that I recommend for any small business. And the three pages, it starts with a squeeze page. That's page one. We call it a squeeze page because it's designed solely to squeeze the email address out of any visitor that lands at your website.
Right.
It offers usually a free report. And this is a digitally downloaded item that can be immediately downloaded once they provide their email address. So there's a big, bold headline with a big promise about what this free item is going to deliver for the visitor, some copy about business, and certainly some copy about what the value of the product, the free download is. Then an opt-in box at the bottom where people can provide their first name, their email address, their zip code, so you know where your potential customers are coming from, and then ask them to hit the submit button to get the link to that free download. That's the squeeze page. The second page of this three-page website formula is called the congratulations page, and that just says, hey, congratulations, you've opted in successfully. That free report or free audit or free assessment tool, free questionnaire, whatever it is you're giving away, that's going to be flowing to your email inbox. Check for a link there where you can download it immediately. But to get going right away, improving your business, having a better relationship with your team, whatever the main goal is, click here to read more about our blank. And that blank is an entry-level product that you have for sale on page 3 of this 3-page website formula, an entry-level product that's priced about $40 to $50 for consumers, closer to $100 for small businesses if that's your main market, but an entry-level item that might be a workbook plus some audio recordings. Perhaps it's a 15-minute consultation. Perhaps it's a free sample of some kind if they print out a coupon and bring it into your store, or some bonus that goes along. You know, whatever it is, it's an entry-level item at an entry-level price that just creates a new customer for your business so that you can upsell them later. Now, the good news about this entire three-page formula is that original opt-in box on the squeeze page, page one, should be tied to what is called a shopping cart. That's an online engine that runs in the background that collects all this data and then has the ability to send out pre-written, pre-scheduled marketing messages to those email addresses once they opt in. Those are typically called an autoresponder. So you'll have the email addresses of your customers, whether they purchase or not, or the email addresses of all your visitors, and you can continue marketing to them for as long as they're on your list until they opt out.
Yeah, big message throughout the book is to take better care of our customers' information.
Mm-hmm.
And I know many people are not very good at that. I guess I'm one of them. I'm going to fess up, okay? I know that you've got some insight into how successful entrepreneurs manage their time. What do you think are the most impactful tips that you can give about managing time effectively for a busy entrepreneur?
Well, Jack Canfield and I write in the Success Principles about this entrepreneurial time formula. And there are three kinds of days that an entrepreneur should be scheduling on their calendar. First of all, they should pre-schedule all of their rest and relaxation days, all of their vacation days, with a goal of taking at least 100 or more days a year of vacation, rest, and relaxation time. And then the next kind of day is called a buffer day. That's the kind of day where you get ready to be your most productive. You hold staff meetings, you do research on the internet, you check into a new product or service that you want to offer, you do some planning, you attend a seminar, an industry conference, whatever it is. Those are buffer days. And then the third kind of day are those days where you are the most productive. If you're a consultant and you make your most money from being on the phone consulting with clients, or writing things for them, or developing studies for them, or whatever you do as a consultant, if your most productive or most profitable time is spent doing that, you need to schedule as many of those days as possible. So the whole point is to increase your rest and relaxation days and increase your most productive days and lower your buffer days by offloading a lot of that get-ready time to staff or outsource vendors.
Good advice. Good advice. We're almost at the end of our segment now. If I'm desperate for cash, whether I'm an employee, an employer, or sometime entrepreneur, what should I do today to make some instant cash?
Well, if you're desperate, first of all, calm down because it is possible to get out of your situation. And then go to my website, instantincome.com, and download those free items that I talked about. There's a free workbook I have for radio listeners called The Instant Income Planner. It's followed right away, 2 days later, by the Instant Income 10-Day Turnaround Program. It tells you exactly what to do every day for 10 days to bring in emergency cash. You can download it for free. And, of course, as I mentioned, the Internet Press Release Distribution Package is free along with that. That'll come a few days later.
Janet Schweitzer, you've given some great information out today. There's a ton more in the book, Instant Income Strategies That Bring in the Cash for Small Businesses, Innovative Employees, and Occasional Entrepreneurs. Your website is instantincome.com. What would you like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, I think the main point is to have listeners really understand that it is possible to get to create instant income in their business. This is not a get-rich-quick scheme. You don't just walk to the mailbox and collect a check. There is some work involved, but if you will hone your work time down to executing just those strategies that bring in the cash very quickly that are proven to do that, you can literally turn around your business. And the other thing is, too, most small businesses do not have really systems set in place, established in the business to facilitate the ongoing implementation of these instant income strategies. So if you can develop systems in your business as well that will help you implement and execute these strategies on a regular basis and plan ahead for when you need to make cash, not just making emergency money in the moment, then you'll go really far in developing your business and being able to work more on the business versus in the business, as many small business owners do.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for being with us, Janet Schweitzer. You can find out more about Janet's work at instantincome.com. And coming up next, today it's easier than ever for people to reach their customers, but most of them experience information overload. How can we, as business owners, job hunters, or bloggers, make sure our message is heard above the chatter? Well, I talked to Julian Smith, one of the authors of Trust Agents, using the web to build influence, improve reputations, and earn trust. And this is what he had to say. So first question I have for you today, Julian, first of all, thanks for being with us on Conversations Live. I wanted to just read a quote from the book jacket. You say it's easier than ever to reach your customers, but less likely that they'll listen. Today, the most valuable online currency isn't the dollar, but trust itself. So talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Sure. An economy is basically anything that there is a limited supply of, and due to that limited supply and increased demand, people can trade it or they can find ways to develop it and so on. So we talk about something like, obviously the dollar being a currency, but there are many other currencies that are in play. One of the examples that we use in the book is the currency of attention. And what we're experiencing right now is the fact that even though there are many, many ways to get attention, many more ways than you ever could, sort of attention to your business or whatever, it's extremely difficult because people are getting so skeptical about anything that you tell them. And so what we need is to develop a kind of reputation or trust with the people that we communicate with, whereby we have given them so much good stuff and they've seen the quality of the stuff that we've given them in the past. And so that sort of reliability, that consistency, shows that we are trustworthy people. And when we eventually decide, okay, we're going to take this and, we're going to ask them to get X or Y thing or perform whatever action, then they'll be more than willing because of the fact that they've seen the way we've behaved in the past.
Now, we did a show last month on trust in business and the importance of relationships. How do you see it being a little different for maybe online trust and communication?
Well, the first thing that I'd like to say is that it isn't different. Humans have behaved the same way for hundreds or thousands of years, and they've trusted the same people and for the same reasons that they trust in the past. The difference is that the signals are different and the tools are different. So the tools are different because we have different megaphones that we used to have, right? We used to have the newspaper as a metaphorical megaphone. Now we have the internet as a metaphorical megaphone. And so we we show different signals of trust than we used to. The fact that we used to be able to get into print was a signal of trust in the first place, because of the fact that there would be editors and there would be people looking at it and going, you know what, this isn't good enough, and this is good enough, so I'm going to choose, you know, B over A or whatever. And that would be a kind of a signal of trust. Oh, you've been in print. Whereas now on the web, anyone can get their own megaphone, they can get their own channel, and for that reason, and as well as the fact that we can't, there's all this language that we're missing. We're missing body language, we're missing all these nonverbal signals.
Right.
We need new signals that some people have difficulty recognizing in the beginning when they're on the web, but that if you've been on the web for a long time, you recognize them, and so you know when people are being trustworthy and when they're not, and more importantly, when they're showing these things without knowing them.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of those trust signals that you know, that when you're looking yourself, what kind of signals give you a red flag and what kind of signals draw you closer to that site in the way of trust?
Yeah. One of the things that we look at is reliability. When we have a blog, for example, it has to be consistent. It has to be not only I'm putting out a post every day for a week, but I'm putting out every post every day, every week, or once a week, or whatever it is that your schedule is. But if you're on again and off again and on again and off again, people are going to be like, well, I'm going to stop going to that site because it's not showing me, you know, I keep going and there's nothing new, for example.
Right.
And other things that have always worked very well, continue to work very well. For example, if you've been connected to, I don't know, if I've been interviewed by CNN like I was last week, and I can show that on my website with the CNN logo, then the sort of the trust that goes to the CNN logo is also sort of also impacts me. We have all these different signals of trust that we can use that, when we put them together, put together a picture of somebody who is trustworthy. But like we said before, they're different than they were before. There is no signal that says, well, this guy is on the air, so he's trustworthy. Instead, it's obviously this guy has his own website like everybody does. Now, what am I going to need to show in order to tell people that I'm going to be here tomorrow as well?
Yeah, that's a key point, because it's so easy to throw a website up today. Almost anybody can do it. And there are, I've seen myself, as I'm sure you have and many of our listeners, what I would call an empty storefront. There's no real name or relationship behind it.
Absolutely true, right? Like, because all the tools are there, they're all available, anybody can throw up a blog or anybody can throw up a sort of an e-commerce site and sell whatever they want. Who knows whether you'll ever get anything or not. That's why we have things like, and another example of a logo that we throw up on a website in order to give people confidence is the VeriSign logo. It's a very famous old logo from like the 1990s on the web, where it'd be like, this site has been verified by VeriSign, and because of that, people look at it and they go, oh, this is a real website. But those are not the only things that work. The ability to have other people mention you works very well. So, for example, my co-author, Chris, if they go to his website, chrisbrogan.com, and they go, oh, and they hear about me from him, that's going to be a lot more reliable than somebody just coming to my website from a random other place. The ability to be referenced by other people is supremely important, and for that reason, community is important on the web a lot, too.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about your book. It's called Trust Agents, Using the Web to Build Influence, Improve Reputation, and Earn Trust, co-authored, as you said, by Chris Brogan and yourself, Julian Smith. The book, you say, is about business, not technology. A lot of people hear social media, and if they're not into technology, they just want to shut their ears at that. Tell us why it's more about business than technology.
Sure. For me, the most important thing, as we've discussed before, is that it returns to basic human understanding of each other. And the only thing that we have to change is the fact that the tools are different. So we have no technical jargon in the book, and that's because it's not a book about technology, it's a book about humans. And we think that every business owner, every person who has a message that they want to spread, every person who helps with a nonprofit organization needs these tools because of the fact that first of all, it's an issue of competition. Everyone else is beginning to use them, and so they're starting to show that, yes, in fact, there is a measurable difference. They move the needle, you know? And I think that's it. It's the ability for business owners, they need to continue to learn that not just the old stuff that they're doing works well, that the new stuff will end up working just as well also. It's just not as well proven. But because it's not as well proven, the competition isn't as big as it would be for, let's say, print advertising or other stuff like that. It means it's a bit of a Wild West, and it means that if you take advantage of it now, it might end up being really great for you.
Right. You just mentioned the importance of community and trust in the community and building that. You have a chapter in the book called Being One of Us. You talk of earning a place in the online community of choice. I wonder if we could talk a little bit about what you mean by being one of us.
Absolutely. You know how we hear the expression a lot, that business owner is a pillar of our community?
Mm-hmm.
To me, when I look at that and that I look at that expression, I take that and I separate it into pillar of the community and a business owner. To me, pillar of community comes first. If you're a good neighbor and a good community member, then as a result of that, you can have a successful business. It's much easier. Imagine that there are two corner stores, one across the street from the other. If one of them, goes to the poker night every Friday that everybody in the neighborhood is having, or goes to all the barbecues, everyone's going to go to that store whether it's better or not, and they'll only go to the second store that nobody knows the owner of, because of the fact that availability or something like that. But largely we want to do business with the people that we like, and we like people by having them be in our communities, being related through different interests that we have. If we like cars, then we're going to end up being able to talk about cars. So there's a lot of different ways to be one of us, whether it's connected through a specific subject or whether it's just we hang out at the same place at the same time.
Mm.
You can take advantage of any one of them that you want.
Right. You talk about 5 steps to engage in communities. You put a checklist in the book. Listening comes first. Measuring conversations. What do you mean by measuring conversations?
The ability to measure conversations on the web is actually a lot more important than people give it credit for. What happens is that due to things like Twitter, conversations that we used to have around the water cooler, and in some ways we do still have around the water cooler, are also happening on the web in a place where we can measure them. So now we can look at the web and go, okay, so, who's talking about Starbucks and what are they saying? Instead of, let's go to the Starbucks and talk trash about them or, say how much we love them while we're in the Starbucks. It happens on Twitter where it's measurable, and that means that we can take that and then we can show that data to our superiors, to our bosses, and say, we need to leave an impact here, because otherwise people are just going to keep having this conversation and they're never going to get a response.
Mm. Julian, I want to ask you about taking small steps. We're talking about engaging communities. We're talking about a checklist you have in the book. And you say the first actions you make shouldn't be intrusive. Talk about how we can start building relationships on the web without being intrusive.
Absolutely. One of the things that is most important to me, and we start off the book with an unusual example that I'll bring up briefly here, is that of Donnie Brasco. They made a movie about him. He infiltrated the mob. And one of the reasons that it took him so long to do so is because of the fact that he needed to take small, casual steps that weren't seen as intrusive. It's the same with any community. It's not just about the mob. It's about any other community that happened to like each other on the inside more than they like pretty much any outsider. And for that reason, you need to become one of the insiders, and that takes a lot of time, and it needs to be done, through building rapport and all these other things. And so because of that, we can't just go in there, with guns blaring. It's not a natural human thing to do. Think back to tribal societies, people that are part of a group, they like each other, they trust each other to do the right thing by each other, and then outsiders come in and be like, well, I have no evidence about this guy one way or the other, why should I trust him? And so for that reason, it's a slow process, and it means that we should be doing things in a slow human way. We don't just invite our new neighbor over to every party automatically. We figure out a little bit what he's about, what he does for a living. We check him out when he trims the rose bushes, things like that. It takes time.
Yeah, it does. It does. You also talk about leading a new initiative when the time is right and you're a bit better known. Now, I want to tie that into being a trust agent. You talk about becoming a trust agent. I wonder if you'd just share with us how we become, well, first of all, what a trust agent is for those who don't know.
So, we use the expression trust agent because we think that, the way communication has been going on since, different kinds of media have been invented, newspapers, television, whatever, every time that there's a change in media, there is a change in the way we communicate a little bit, just like, when the bicycle was invented, it changed the way that we move. So it's the same with the web, except before you needed expensive radio towers and you needed expensive printing presses, and now all you need is a computer. So what happens is that a lot of power that used to gathered in a network or in a radio station is now gathered in one person. And if that person is able to develop influence and build trust, then we call them trust agents, because they've never before has one person been able to build such a huge amount of influence so quickly and with so few expenses.
Mm. And is this how we position ourselves as a leader? In, you talk a lot about either, you know, being one of us or positioning yourself as a leader in your own space.
So the expression that we use for that is, the expression that I like to commonly use and that we use in the book is be the priest and build the church. That has nothing to do with religion at all. It's more like be the center of the community and build a place where people gather. And so in our case, we do things like we build PodCamp events, which are conferences that anyone can go to for free and talk about social media, whether Twitter or podcasting or whatever. And that can be the case with anything. You can, you know, you can get people together on the Sunday afternoons when all of them have Mustangs and love their cars, you know. Whatever it is that you're doing, if you become somebody who's an organizer, you become the center of the community instead of somebody that's at the outskirts. And like we said before, that can take time, but it's time well spent, because once you're at the center, people look to you for leadership, and then, you know, you're in a really great place from that point on.
Mm. All right, Julian, I want to ask you about something on your blog that I read, because you talked earlier about how it takes time to manage all this social media. And I know, as a small business owner myself, I know, you know, many of our listeners are small business owners. People do wonder, you know, how am I supposed to have the time to manage all of this? And you actually say on your blog, I've made the joke before that before looking for people to work with, I check their Twitter account, and if they tweet a lot, there's no chance I'm working with them. So how do we manage to get all of this done? How do you manage to keep up with everything?
So, I mean, I do make that joke, but it is partially true. And what it goes back to is signals of trust, right? Like, if you're paying too much attention over here and not enough attention over here, because everything is visible on the web, you know, I'm going to get to see both sides. Just like if somebody is, let's say you and I are talking about a third friend and you're saying, oh, I don't like her very much or blah, blah, blah. But then to her face, you say, oh, yeah, hey, what's going on? And you're all friendly. I know that you're somebody who talks behind people's backs. I can connect the dots like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so as a small business owner, you do need to find the time to pay attention on both ends and realize that a lot of what you're doing used to not be in public, and it is now. For that reason, you need to sort of almost like take an attitude in your head, like, how much time am I going to pay attention? And when you pay attention, pay full attention to one thing. Another thing that I talk about on the blog is, you know, when you're speaking to somebody, no matter who it is or how important they are in your eyes, don't also be looking at your iPhone or be looking, you know, past their shoulder to somebody else. Pay full attention to them. And that's one of the things about attention, especially in this age where we're so attention deficit disorder prone, is that we need to be paying full attention when we pay attention, not splitting it up between multiple things.
Yeah, I just find that very rude. It's a practice that's growing, though, isn't it? People texting while they're still talking and eating at the same time with you.
Right, of course.
At the back of the book, you talk about ways people may trash the lessons in this book, and you come back with answers for those. So I think they're important. I want to talk about it. Big businesses won't adopt any of this. Well, we already know that's not true, because big businesses are, aren't they?
So with big business, it's true. Some of them are paying attention and some of them aren't. It's all about scale. You know, the reality is that small businesses are just like, I want to feed my family. And big businesses are like, and you'll pardon me if I use the expression, I want to maximize shareholder value or whatever. And so we have different goals. To me, I look at it and I go, okay, so if this is not for this big business, okay, that's fine. It doesn't matter to me whether one specific business decides they want to use it or experiment with it or whatever. What matters to me is people that I know in my specific circumstances, which are small business owners, people that have a few employees, and looking at measurable differences that have happened to me and other people that I've known. And so we do look at those people and go, oh, you know what? They're gonna say, oh, this is not for everyone. And it's true. It isn't for everyone. But for those that it is for, it's going to work tremendously well.
Mm. Another big common issue is that it's not measurable. And you talk about that in the back of the book. It isn't very measurable. Well, it isn't, is it? So how do you measure success using social media?
So in Agent Zero, one of the chapters in our book, we talk about how if you have a wide network, you get deals that just kind of come to you. It didn't seem like you worked for them, but in fact, you did work for them at some point in the past. It's just not measurable how much email me and say they needed a community manager for a specific company that spoke French, because I also speak French. And because of that, anyone who is connected to me, even though I happen to not be working in that space right now, has the chance of being able to get this business. All they had to do was connect to me to do that and prove to me that they were reliable and show, as we call them in the book, signals of trust. And so for that reason, it isn't measurable, but that doesn't mean it's not real. It does work.
Okay, sounds good. And if people want to know more, they can find the book, Trust Agents Using the Web to Build Influence, Improve Reputation, and Earn Trust by Chris Brogan and Julian Smith at any bookstore. What would you like to leave our listeners with today, Julian?
I guess the one thing that I really want to deliver to people is, and I want to tell anybody that's listening, that's willing to listen, that you are capable of doing it. That people think that it's too much or maybe too intimidating because it's on the web, it's different, they haven't experienced that before. That everybody was there at some point. Nobody, except people that are maybe 5-10 years old, have lived their entire life with the web present in their lives. We all had to learn it, and so because of that, you can do it too. Just because you're not there now, it doesn't mean you're not capable. Every single one of us has to learn new skills every day. We all had to learn to drive, and we all figured out how to drive. We can all figure this out too. So I would invite you to go check out the book and hope that you learn a lot from it.
And why don't you give out your website, please, too?
My website is inoveryourhead.net, and the website for the book is trustagent.com. If you want to connect to our community, that's at facebook.com/trustagents.
All right, great. Julian Smith, thank you so much for being with us today. Some great insight in the book and some great tips.
My pleasure. It was fun.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, we'll discuss a new PBS documentary film, The Botany of Desire, with Michael Schwartz. We'll explore how nature not only satisfies our desires, but also creates new ones. Until then, live well, live strong.